This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by MMComfortSystems.com. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? A Jason Rant exclusive.
I kind of adored this story on so many levels. And normally we would all just kind of laugh at this if kids weren't involved, if kids weren't being impacted. And so we'll just partially laugh at this because the good news is the district decided to walk back an absurd policy after I started to ask some very basic questions like, what is this policy based on? What kind of science and data backs this COVID policy? What is this COVID policy, you ask? Geiger Montessori School in Tacoma demanded elementary students chew and swallow their lunch with their mask on. When they're in the cafeteria, they are to pull the mask down, take a bite of their sandwich, put the mask back up, chew and swallow. That was the policy at Geiger Elementary. And when a parent complained and tried to get a basic understanding of what in the world this policy is in place for, the district comes back and cited guidance that does not actually exist. In fact, the guidance says the opposite of what they claimed. Principal Neil O'Brien emailed parents about 4 days after the first day of school, and he had an update on the COVID mitigation policies on campus. He wanted to tell everyone what they're doing to keep your kids safe. And in this, he said students have to wear their masks during lunch in the cafeteria. And despite social distancing and him bragging about having outstanding ventilation, they have to put the mask back on to chew and swallow their food. And it was an email with a policy that caught Michael off guard. Michael is a parent of a kid who's enrolled at Geiger. He's going to be on the show at about 5:10 or so today to take us through his experiences. But he told me, he got this email. He was like, wait, what? Come again? This doesn't really make sense. I don't understand this. Why would you put what you just put in an email? And directly, this is the quote from the email. Yes, children should wear masks during lunch. They can lower it to take a bite or drink and raise it to chew, swallow, or talk. Our cafeteria has a fantastic airflow system, and children are spaced apart, and when over 100 of them are in the large room, we need to treat lunchtime as a dangerous time for all. Oh my gosh, it's a dangerous time for all. Put down those nuggets. This is a dangerous time for all. He says children need to continue to wear their masks during lunch. Now, that makes no sense. That entire policy makes no sense whatsoever. Why would children, who, by the way, are in the demographic least negatively impacted by COVID, why would they have to wear a mask to chew and swallow? You don't have to do that as an adult in a restaurant. This is not a requirement anywhere. And by the way, if you're bragging about having a quote-unquote fantastic airflow system where kids are spaced apart, it's not a dangerous time at all, period. So Michael, this father, emailed the principal, called the principal, emailed some more, hasn't received a single response. He never heard back. He did, however, hear from a woman named Shalee Hobbs. She is the administrator of health services over at the Tacoma Public School District. And she sent him back an email with a whole bunch of data, links to guidance, both nationally and locally, to explain this policy. The, what I'll call, masking while masticating policy. Because there's some alliteration going on, and people are like, wait, did he say, what did he, masticate, not what you think, dirty people.
Look, that can be really confusing, Jason.
For stupid people.
Okay, I'm stupid. What do you want?
Everyone knows what masticate means.
Yeah,
it means
of course
to chew.
I do. Yeah, that's exactly
M&M, see, masking, get it?
Yeah, no, that, I knew exactly what that was, and I didn't confuse it with anything else.
So, yes, you did. You're a liar. Everyone saw the face that you made. This is a policy that isn't actually based in science. And so I read this email with great interest because thankfully she put up a whole bunch of links to take us to the guidance. For example, she cites CDC guidance that she claims says, quote, children are encouraged to put their, and she misspells there, mask back on when not eating or drinking is outlined in the CDC resource document outlined in the K-12's school guidance. And she makes it so easy because she even cites a page number that she's pulling this guidance from. And so I went to that page number. It's page number 6, for those of you following at home. Neither page 6 nor any other page in the document addresses masks while chewing and swallowing. It does not appear in this document. In fact, the only thing on this particular page that is relevant to the conversation about masking during lunch in a classroom suggests that you give social distancing rules to the students, quote, when masks cannot be worn, such as when eating lunch. So in other words, the guidance from the CDC is the exact opposite of what she claims. And it gets more absurd from there, because she goes on in this email to cite, quote, food service and school meals section in the guidance from the CDC. And again, she provides a link that I clicked on and I read. And yet again, there's not even a single mention of eating lunch in this entire guidance sheet. Not a single word having to do with eating lunch. All of it has to do with social distancing during lunch. She notes and cites DOH, Department of Health, guidance from here in Washington State. A whole bunch. None of the documents reference what she claims. Not a single bit of time is spent on putting a mask on while chewing or swallowing. Nothing. And yet, inexplicably, Shalae Hobbs from the Tacoma Public School District cites the exemption section from a Secretary of Health order on COVID. I'm assuming she hasn't actually read it, because it explicitly says you do not have to wear a mask, quote, while engaged in the act of eating or drinking. Despite citing guidance that does not actually exist. In fact, it says the opposite of what she claims. She concludes that, quote, eating can be a high-risk activity as masks are removed, and in some instances, students are within 6 feet. Remasking when not actively engaged in eating or drinking can help add another layer of protection. Which is, I suppose that's technically true, but I could also then follow the same logic and say, don't allow kids to eat. And so if they never take off their mask to chew and to swallow, they will be better protected. So they should never eat again in public.
I really want you to be in charge of things, Jason. That sounds like a grand idea.
This is remarkable how insane this response is. It is hard to imagine how this principal and how this administrator of health services got this so spectacularly wrong. How they misread the guidance this poorly. It's either intentional or it shows some level of illiteracy. I believe they are literate. So it has to be intentional. Now, when I reached out to the Tacoma Public School spokesperson, it took her 6 days and 5 emails to sort out an answer as to where this policy came from. In what science or data is this based? But finally, the spokesperson reached out with a statement that said the standard originally set at Geiger was established in good faith as an interpretation of health department guidance to wear masks when actively eating. In checking with the health department, that standard goes beyond their intent. We won't discipline any students for not wearing their masks between bites, and this is not the guidance being used at other schools. Which is weird, because if it's not being used at other schools, why is it that the school district health administrator had all of this background info to support this one particular policy? Was this policy actually even changed after we got this statement? They won't say. They won't confirm. The principal is still not responding to the parent who asked a basic and reasonable question. Now, I don't doubt that the policy was put in place in good faith, right? I don't doubt that. I'm sure he had the best of intentions. This is not about good faith versus bad faith. This is about showing, number one, an extraordinary level of incompetence to misread the guidance so poorly. But number two, and arguably more important, this is the kind of policy one can only get if you are acting hysterical, if you are overstating the threat of COVID and kids. To be clear, and this is good news, children rarely die or even get seriously ill from COVID. You have more, despite the misinformation that Dr. Fauci put out just over the weekend. You have more kids dying from the flu, which is also very, very, very low, than dying from COVID. We should celebrate that. We should say, wow, this is very good news. Our children are the least vulnerable. Let us now come up with policies that are reasonable, that are fair, that keep kids safe, because we still don't want kids to get COVID. But we're not going to go overboard. We're not going to be hysterical. We're not going to claim that lunchtime is the most dangerous time to be alive. This is an adult in this principle who should be acting responsible in front of these kids. Is he talking about COVID in such hysterical, lunatic, unreasonable ways in front of these kids? Because that's going to scare them. So if the goal was meant to scare these kids to death, this policy could be viewed as a success. But our goal should not be to be hysterical. Our goal should not be to be hysterical. It should be to promote responsibility and reason and logic in any of these safety policies. Now, if you want to see these emails, you want to read the direct links that were provided by the school district, it really is kind of funny. Text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Text R-A-N-T-Z to 1-800-465-8770. Or go directly to ktth.com. Don't forget, if you missed any of my appearances on Fox News, including my hit at Fox News at Night, or any future hit like Fox News Primetime tomorrow or the Faulkner Focus on Friday, you can check me out on my YouTube page. Just go to youtube.com/JasonRants. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
There were dueling protests against two encampments at Seattle parks, one at Woodland Park, another one over in Green Lake. And on one side, you had those who smartly want parks to be cleared of these homeless encampments. They want the people who are living outside to go inside to take us up on our offers of resources. And then on the other side, you've got people who use the homeless as human props to signal their virtue.
I mean, it's maxed out.
It is messed up, says Amy Graff. She is a parent talking to Cairo 7 TV. And she's got two kids who run cross country. And as we report about a month-ish or so ago, Woodland Park said, no, sorry, we can't allow kids to run here for their cross country leagues anymore because we've decided to cede over this space to the homeless. The city won't grant any of these leagues the permits that they need to use the park that their parents are paying for. Instead, we have given it over to dozens and dozens and dozens of homeless people, many of whom are not just living in horrible situations, but they can be dangerous. In fact, we know that they are dangerous. Not all of them, but too many of them. And so you've got parents like Amy who's speaking up and saying enough is enough.
A man with his pants down. They can't go in the bathroom because there's a fire.
Does that sound like a good situation for anyone? Not just the kids who can't use this park or the adults who can't use the park, but the folks who are actually living out there. Between the two parks, you have 150 homeless people living there. Or excuse me, Cairo 7 TV says unhoused individuals. They're unhoused. You mean they're homeless? No, we say unhoused. Why? Because it's harder to come up with solutions to problems, but it's much easier to come up with synonyms. Okay. So yesterday afternoon, about 40 people or so stood on that walking bridge over Aurora. And they were holding signs. They had messages like, we want our parks back. Unbelievably controversial, it turns out. Because there are some folks who are like, you don't get your parks back. We want the parks to be given to the homeless. You had lunatics showing up to protest the protesters.
Dude, you ripped my sign, bro. Come on. My kids want to play in the park.
Dude, you ripped my sign, bro. I mean, I'm on his side, but that was kind of weak sauce. Did the kids still say that?
Nobody says weak sauce anymore. That was like 18 years ago. Back when you were like 56.
Come on, bro. You ripped my sign. Okay, he ripped your sign. He is a crazy person. These people are insane. They want people to keep living outside. Why? They say it lacks compassion to do any sweeps. To them, it's compassionate to keep people living outside, in the cold, in the rain, surrounded by human waste, surrounded by used needles, living in many cases with a mental health issue that hasn't been treated or an addiction that hasn't been treated. Vulnerable to predators, vulnerable to the people who are going to steal their stuff and beat them up. They think that that is compassionate, leaving them there. But really, the reason why they do this is so that they can take selfies with these homeless people. That, don't worry, they'll bring them a soy latte that no one asked for. They'll take a selfie with them, then post it on Instagram with the hashtag, I'm a hero. Community heroes, saving the homeless. They're doing it to virtue signal. You had over the weekend Seattle Fire responding to 3 fires at the camps around Green Lake. 3. One got out of control and burned up a tent. And what I find curious here, we finally got the most updated numbers on homeless fire encampments in the city of Seattle this year. Now, as of the last data I had, it was about 800 or so. Well, as of September 19th, they have responded to 925 fires and illegal burn calls at homeless encampments. That's about 100 more than what they had last year. And we're not even done with the year. And it's leaving people like Amy just hoping that the problem gets fixed.
Everyone's pointing the finger. So at what point do we work together? I think we can all solve this. It's solvable.
Here's the problem. While she's right that it's solvable, she's wrong that we can all work together. We can't. We can't. Because you have one side that does not want to work to clear these encampments. They have one idea in mind. They want subsidized housing. They're under this nonsensical belief, doesn't even mean anything, that housing is a human right. I don't know what that means. What kind of housing? Because they believe you have the right to camp out wherever it is you want, even though we have a shelter space available, including hotel rooms, that we can be putting a lot of these people in. Not all of them. If today, every single homeless person in Seattle or King County or Washington State said, bring me indoors, I am ready, we would not be able to accommodate. We don't have that problem. Because we have more people saying they don't want to go inside. And they don't want to go inside for a variety of rules. Some of them have to do with just that, rules. They don't want to abide by some of the rules that, by the way, help create an environment, a situation where they ended up homeless to begin with. If they're not going to say yes to our offers of help that we make over and over and over again, we sweep. Period. End of story. You do not have the right to ruin a park for everybody else who's playing by the rules, who's spending lots of money every single year in taxes so that we can maintain these parks for them to use with their kids, with their family and friends, with their dogs, and sometimes with the cats on the leash, which I don't understand, but I'm not going to judge. Well, I am totally going to judge you, but if that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. You paid for these parks. They're not able to take advantage. And one side of this says, don't get involved. Ignore them. Stop trying to work with them. They are recalcitrant. They will never be happy until you give in to their political demands, their ideological demands. They want the government to take control of housing. No, we're not going to get there, even in the short term. And I'm unwilling to let people suffer outside when we can help, nor am I willing to let people just say, no. Don't want to. You cannot work with people who don't want to work with you. There's no such thing as working together with a lot of these people. That's on them. That's not on us. And if we wanted to truly do the right thing, the compassionate thing, we would be working harder to bring people indoors. And if they say no, then you know what? You got to have a carrot and stick approach. Do what they're doing in Marysville and Bellevue and Monroe and parts of Pierce County, because it's working. Even in Olympia, where they have some really, really bad Seattle-style policies, when they implement the you can't stay here rule, they've seen results. It could happen here. We just have to have the political will to do it. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. Send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show, back here in our Seattle studio after a trip to Phoenix and Turning Point USA. I did some live shows for them over the last couple days. We got all the video up at facebook.com/Jason Rantz. Not to jinx it at all, but I have been now to Arizona, Texas, and Florida, hanging out exclusively with conservatives.
I like it better when you're in those states.
I do too. And I haven't been hit with COVID yet, so that's good. That's something.
Are you on the it's a myth train now, Jason?
No, but I am on a it's not as bad as people are pretending in the media in Florida, Arizona, or Texas, Kick. I'm all on that train. People were wearing masks where they thought it was necessary. Others were not. It's also, it was like 147 degrees yesterday. And so the thought of wearing a mask is just, was insane to me. And everyone was fine.
How was Whataburger?
What did you call it?
Whataburger.
Is that what you, it makes it sound like you're saying Whataburger.
Yeah, you're supposed to find that fine line in there between what and water.
No, it's just
Whataburger. Don't say Whataburger.
Okay.
Whataburger.
It took, and I'm not kidding, 30 minutes to get my food once I ordered. And I ate about half of it because I had to go back to the hotel to get picked up to go to Turning Point USA.
You probably could have flew home, got Shake Shack, and then flew back.
Shake Shack sucks. Stop this nonsense. And by the way, I also had In-N-Out yesterday. Also, very overrated.
Dude, you're from L.A. You can't say that.
Well, it's true. It's overrated. And Whataburger or Whataburger or whatever. It was fine.
Is there a burger that pleases you?
I like Dick's Burgers here. I think that those are really good. Cali Burger I like.
I've never heard of Cali Burger.
Cali Burger. I think they have one in the U District, I think.
Did Tom ever review there? Was it?
No, I don't know if producer Tom went. I should. I mean, I've been meaning to reach out to him and see if he was looking for his job back. I will ask him that.
You should ask him. I'm sure he'd be really interested.
Let's talk about COVID. Since I just got back from a place where I'm told is seeing end of times due to the COVID outbreak. We have audio from Dr. Scott Gottlieb. He was on Fox. He's the former FDA director under the Obama administration, and he made a point that in no way, shape, or form is true.
I think we're going to move to a paradigm where masks become optional, encouraged in certain settings, and it's going to be based on what the overall prevalence of infection is and what the vaccination rate is and whether or not you're in an environment where there are vulnerable people.
With all due respect to Dr. Scott Gottlieb, because I want him to be right here, there is nothing that has happened in the last couple weeks to 3 weeks or really a month suggesting we're going to a place where things won't be forced upon us. Right? Think about just what's happened locally and nationally. Have we gone away from mandates or towards them? We've gone towards them. So for him to say, oh, we're getting close to a place where masks are going to be optional, kind of depends on what the vaccination rate is. What do you need the vaccination rate to be exactly? Because we are already over 70%, and yet we are moving towards mandates. We have a mandate to wear a mask outdoors in an outdoor stadium at a stadium that is required to check your vaccine passport or show a negative COVID test. And still, regardless of your vaccination status or your test, you have to wear a mask outdoors. Despite, by the way, all of the data suggesting COVID transmission outdoors, including with Delta, is nearly impossible. Not impossible, but nearly impossible. That's what the data suggests. Could it change? Yeah, the data could change. And when the data changes, if it changes, I'll talk about it. But have you heard anyone cite any specific data about Delta transmitting outside? No. Not at all. Would they if they had it? Yes. They don't have it because it doesn't exist. This idea that you have to wear a mask while vaccinated outdoors makes no sense. It's not founded in science or any of the data that we have access to. And all these vaccine mandates and mask mandates, regardless of vaccination status, suggest we're doing the opposite of what Dr. Scott Gottlieb says is going to be a reality. We're now having the conversation, the president is, about domestic travel being tied to your vaccine passport, which sounds illegal to me because you have a constitutional right to travel. I don't know how they would get away with that, but at the same time, we knew that they pushed an unconstitutional eviction moratorium. They didn't really care about what the Constitution has to say or what the Supreme Court says it says. I wish he were right. I don't think he is. Now, at the same time, we're learning that the CDC believes that the flu season this year could be not only more severe than normal, but it could come earlier than normal. UW Medicine Associate Professor of Family Medicine and Global Health, Christopher Sanford, he spoke to Como TV. And he says there are less flu antibodies due to COVID not being a significant issue, or excuse me, due to COVID being a significant issue last year, but not the flu.
People always get protection from a given flu season. Certain number of people get influenza and develop antibodies to those strains of flu. That didn't happen a year ago.
Why didn't it happen a year ago? Because few people got the flu. So they didn't end up getting immunity from it. On top of that, the flu shot that we get every single year, some of us get every single year. Mine, again, depends on the shakiness of the hands of the nurse who's downstairs in the office who comes to give us flu shots every year. And if her hands look a little bit too shaky, I'm out. If they look sturdy, if it's a clean needle puncture, I'm in. And really, depending on how long the line is. I don't know why they do that, because then you got to get the shot in front of other employees, and then they can see you wince if you get the flu shot. And I don't want to wince in front of some people.
Well, you are, I mean, you're afraid of everything. You're afraid of the murder hornets.
I just pull everyone because they're going to murder all of us, and they're everywhere. It's just a matter of time. So they're saying this year it's going to be particularly bad, which is why they're saying still get the flu shot.
The best thing you can do, of course, is to get a flu shot.
But there are some parents out there who are particularly anxious about this, like Renee. She lives in Tacoma. And she's hearing from these experts who say kids could be hit particularly hard when it comes to the flu.
So now you're sending them back to school and they're exposed to everything at once. I think the risk is it's there. Extremely high chances of contracting in school.
It's interesting because I made this point at some point either last year or maybe earlier in the year that people are going to start to get sicker this year, not having to do directly with COVID, but indirectly with COVID, because everyone stayed away from each other and from germs, from the elements for a year. You covered your face, you washed your hands so much until you saw the bone. You were Purelling all day, every day, and some exposure to bacteria, to the dirt, to the grime, some of that is actually healthy. It's good for you. It's how you develop an immune system. And we took all of that away for so many people, some more than others. And now we're throwing them back into the world in which they will then become exposed. And they won't have the same kind of immunity. So they're going to get sick more often. I'm curious as we head into what might be a more serious flu season, or more prevalent, I should say. I'm curious to find out how many people get the flu and then go to the ERs and claim that they might have COVID, get tested for COVID, be found. No, you just have the flu, dum-dum. Go back home. Go rest. Oh, you have COVID? Go back home. Get rest. I'm wondering how much this is going to put a strain on our hospitals at a time where, by the way, staff is down. Nurses are quitting. Some of it having to do with exhaustion. Some of it having to do with the vaccine mandate. So now we might potentially put even more of a burden on these hospitals. I'm curious to find out how many COVID cases are truly the flu. And I suppose vice versa. I think it's very clear that when we said there was virtually no flu last year, I don't know if I believe that. I'm willing to bet, given the fact that the effects of COVID are very similar, the symptoms are very similar to the flu, I'm willing to bet a lot of that was confused. Not all of it. I don't believe some sort of conspiracy, but I'm willing to bet that there was more flu last year than people realize. And I suppose if we don't have this hardcore flu season this year, maybe that is instructive to say that we got a lot of the cases wrong last year, that it wasn't so low. Because the whole idea, the whole theory behind having a very bad flu season is that we didn't have it last year. Well, we'll see. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. When we come back, we're going to talk to a Snohomish County Council candidate who you need to support to make sure the county doesn't become more like Seattle. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. there is a very important Snohomish County Council race. It's in District Number 4, where the incumbent Democrat, Jared Mead, is taking on a political newcomer by the name of Brenda Carrington. We are big fans of what she will do if elected, but first she has to get elected. That means you guys actually have to go out and make sure she gets the support she needs, not just with your own vote, but you have to make sure that other people know about this candidacy. Joining me on the line is Brenda Carrington. Welcome to the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you for having me on the show.
Why do you think that this is the election? Because I know that every single time an election happens, they say this is the most important election of our lifetimes. Why do you actually think this is the case this time around?
This actually is very important, especially for Snohomish County. It's a four-year term, and most people don't understand that. They thought it was a one-year term, especially since I stood up last year to get recognized for running in this race. So I've been running for the past 2 years for the same seat. It's a four-year term. We do have an opportunity to turn Snohomish County red with Nate Nearing. He's running for District 1. It's a re-election for him. He'll most likely get elected. Sam Lowe is running in District 5, another re-election, he'll most likely as well. So with me in there, it'll be the first time in 40 years that we'll actually be the majority and flip it red. So that's exciting. We do need to get the voters out. This last election for the primaries, we didn't have the voters turn out. So we're trying to encourage the voters to get out there. I'm actually doing a rally on Sunday in Everett at the Snohomish County Courthouse, and would love for anyone who's out there that's a Republican that wants to come in and just show support with our rally and get people motivated and off this couch. That would be absolutely wonderful.
And you don't only have to be a Republican. You can be whatever political stripe you want. You show up because we understand what's on the line. Now, the news today is that Snohomish County is thinking about, and it seems like the decision has been made, just not announced, forcing a vaccine on county employees. It's a little bit different. The council doesn't have quite the same amount of power than the executive and Dave Summers does on this particular issue. But do you support that?
I don't support the vaccine being forced on anyone. I think that we still have our constitutional rights, and this is still a free country. And I don't think that with all of the problems that we have in our, with everyone coming across our borders that are not being forced to be vaccinated, and they're forcing the, you know, the United States legally here, that's something that concerns me, that they should protect us and our jobs and our families.
Where do you think the disconnect is coming from, though? Because the polling seems to suggest that people are in favor of this, and yet you and I know that this is a slippery slope, that the government should not be, even if we support a vaccine, and I support the vaccine, I'm vaccinated myself, but I'm against a mandate. Where do you think that disconnect is? Why do so many people seem to support this idea?
I believe with the news media, it's convincing people that everyone needs to be vaccinated in order to get back to normal. And my belief is that that at this point, it's not about everybody being vaccinated. When you look at the polls out there of actually the numbers with the COVID, I think that it's made a big impact with people like you that are vaccinated, but I still don't believe that it needs to be forced on the public. And also because it's not 100% of that it's working. I haven't seen the response to that yet.
Well, yeah, I mean, very clearly someone who's vaccinated can still get COVID. Looking just at Snohomish County's numbers, by the way, we're seeing a little bit of a decline in the COVID rate. They're saying their risk is still high. So what should be some of the mitigation efforts for Snohomish County? What would you get behind as a council member?
I'm behind both. I stand for the people that want to be vaccinated, but I also stand for the public that want to protect their medical privacy. The my body, my rights. I believe in that as well. So I think that they should be taking precautions, but I think that they also need to protect all employees. We don't have that. We're hurting in our businesses, and our small businesses are going under, and we don't have a lot of employees that we need already. To keep our businesses going and people working. So I think that they need to focus more on getting our businesses back up and running and thriving communities again.
Brenda Carrington joining me on the line. She's running for Snohomish County Council, District Number 4. She's running up against Jared Mead, who is the incumbent Democrat. This includes Mill Creek, a part of Bothell, Montlake Terrace, and some unincorporated parts of the county as well. You know, you just brought up the business issues that a lot of owners are dealing with. They've got open jobs, but not necessarily people who want to fill them. And in some cases, now they're going to get hit with this sort of burdensome rule from the federal government saying that everyone has to be vaccinated or you have to provide for testing. From just the business perspective, how are you different than Councilmember Jared Mead? Why would a business owner want to support you?
I'm working to bring back our businesses. Jared Mead is promoting growth. And if you've listened to any one of our live debates, that's where we're completely opposite sides. He's pushing for growth. He wants more apartments, and he wants to do less or no building of the family homes, single family homes. So we need to, and he's trying to promote the growth and the taxation of that. So property taxes for the middle class right now is equal to their home house payments. They're losing their homes and going bankrupt. This is also the ones who have the small businesses they're going bankrupt on. So we're losing our middle class, we're losing our businesses, and we need to protect them. So my fight is that we need to clean up the mess before inviting the guests. We need to bring back our small businesses. We need to get the take care of our police. Our police, since my second issue of my platform exactly is that since the new reform that they passed on the police is very upsetting. We've actually losing our police because of it. So that's something else that since that mandate on the reforms passed in state legislature, we've actually lost some serious, even our pillar deputy sheriff, who is Matt Boyce. He is the was the sheriff. He was the head of their association, the president of their association, mm-hmm. and now the laws were against them. They will get arrested if they arrest someone. So he said he's done. He's out, and we lost him. He moved to Arizona. So we're losing our police force. The public deserves to live in safety, and we deserve to live in thriving communities. And my focus is to build back our communities with safety, with our police. I think that they shouldn't be on the budget for cutting on the table. I believe that they should be given money to do their jobs. Our police forces are so cut right now and behind on staffing. So it's just becoming a lot of more crime. We need to build back our communities.
Yeah, and you got to make sure that Snohomish County doesn't become King County. And there's a creep.
Yes, and I love what Mayor John Kartak says. His slogan is don't Seattle our Snohomish. So we add to that and say don't Seattle our Snohomish County. We're trying to put a moat around our county and keep it protected from that.
Well, if people actually want to make sure that bad Seattle policies don't continue to spread into Snohomish County, it's important that you elect Brenda Carrington. She's running in District 4. You've got Nate Nearing and Sam Lowe, two county council members who we fully endorse running for re-election. And of course, we're rooting for Brenda Carrington. Please, please, please make sure you do more than just vote yourself. You have to make sure that your friends and family members who live in the district are doing exactly the same thing. There is the rally this weekend. Give it a plug one more time.
So it's going to be at the Snohomish County Courthouse in Everett. It's in the amphitheater. We're serving pizza for everyone and beverages. We'll have live speakers. We'll have T-shirts. I have 100 T-shirts for people to wear. We have just come out and have a rally, and we're going to encourage you to get people up off the sofas and out to vote. And we'll have cameras there, too, that we can actually put this on digital commercials and things to motivate people.
And the website, BrendaCarrington.com. Brenda, thank you so much for stopping by. As always, I really do appreciate it.
Me, too. Thank you for having me. Have
Absolutely.
A wonderful day.
You as well.
Bye.
You're listening to The Jason Rants Show. We're back with more at the top of the hour.